they mentioned other guys that have fizzled out. So it's easy to sit back and go, well, this is what I think, and then watch it play out and go revisionist history. But if you believe that's your guy, like I said earlier, you got to roll it. You got to roll with it. That's the job you're paid to do. You do it to the best of your ability. And, you know, we talked last week. It's not like the Grizzlies had this just awful season top to bottom. Yeah, at the end of the year, they faltered. They faltered after the All-Star break. They lost their way. They got into a playoff series because they couldn't knock off Golden State, and they got in against the eventual world champion. If Ja doesn't get hurt in that game three, do they win a game two maybe? Sure. But nobody beat them. So it's not like they went out and just embarrassed themselves. Game one, sure, you could say that. But even game two, I thought they just missed shots. So it's not like you're so far off that you can't see the top. There is a long way to climb because of how deep and talented OKC is and how deep and talented the other teams are. So the West is a gauntlet. I look at the East now with the injury to Halliburton, the injury to Tatum, what's going on in Milwaukee with Damian Lillard. That thing is wide open. And you're going to see some teams start to make some moves to try to get guys to make a run at it in the next year or two, because both, I think, Halliburton and Tatum, coming off that injury, it's not going to be hit the ground running in the 26-27 season. They're still going to need some time to get their bodies back acclimated to the NBA rigors. And if you put a team together that can, you know, push out ahead, home court advantage sometimes in a playoff series makes a difference. You look at the West, every night matters. And I think coaches, I know about the rest factor, I know about all that. You're going to have to really think twice about a night where you want to rest guys, but it's a game you think you should win. Because if you are missing home court advantage by one game, two games, and you think of five or six games where you just kind of sat guys to give them a break and didn't give yourself the best chance to win, that can come back and haunt you too.
Eric, we appreciate it, my man.
Guys, thank you.
That is Eric Hasthein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the list. We have some official Pac-12 movement. I want to talk about it with Cobb. I don't think there was something that was more ballyhooed and shoved down our throat that was less planned than the Pac-12. And I think they got a lot of fans riled up when they didn't have a plan. So I want to discuss that. We'll also got to get into Hugh Freeze golfing too much. Lots more. Jason Smith also coming up during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called The List. Let's fire it up. ESPN and the family of networks. All right, Cobb. I get it. It's easy to swing at the king. I'm asking a legitimate question. Does ESPN have a problem covering the NBA?
Yeah, it's not good, man. The draft was rough. It was kind of like they devoted everything to Cooper Flagg, and then once he came off the board, they were like, oh, yeah, we still have 3 hours of content left to fill, and we're going to do that by just zooming in on whatever crying family member we can find.
A lot of tears.
Yeah, right? And they expected that to really carry the broadcast. But I think even casual fans were hoping for a little more analysis on the team fits and the implications for the franchises that were making the selections. Yes, the draft night is about the kids and that moment and their journey. But one, if you really want to highlight that well, you got to do some prepackaged stuff. You got to put in the work ahead of time, get some B-roll footage from their hometown. Some of the stuff they did for Flag, just to a lesser degree, with five or six more prospects throughout the night. And they didn't do any of that advanced legwork. And so we were left just trying to find mom crying and then shoving a microphone in her face to try to get you to cry. And it was just, it felt a little hollow.
Yeah. So a couple of things there. I wholeheartedly agree with your, it's like once they couldn't keep showing that barn scene, which also I didn't have a problem with it. It's for some reason drove my wife insane. She's like, could they have not found another place other than a barn? Like she didn't like, she's like, what am I missing? Why is this there? I was like, well, it's a big open space. You can put a lot of people there. Like, but like, she's like, is he a farmer? Like she was very thrown off by that.
Well, they went all in on Flag. They had live shots of like three different locations within the state of Maine that held significance to Cooper Flag, but they didn't do anything like that for Dylan Harper, who was there at number two. They didn't do anything like that for Edgecombe or Johnson or Fears.
Well, you can understand with Harper, like, well, it's not like he has a pedigree or anything.
Well, it's like, exactly. His dad's a 6-time NBA champion who played for the Bulls
Big
and the Lakers,
up.
And they barely dove into the backstory there at all. I mean, they showed him for like 15 seconds, and it's like, man, this guy, I mean, come on. Like, his dad is one of the most recognizable faces to the old hats. Like, you could have gotten a lot of mileage out of that, and they really didn't.
Okay, so I was wondering this, though. Is this a byproduct of, number one, like, if you think about, why does the NFL draft work as a television product? Primarily, it works because it feels like most everyone that's on stage at the NFL draft is either a draft guy or is someone that has been enough of a player personnel guy or understands the league enough that they can get into it. Further,
I thought Bobby Marks was the best guy on the broadcast last night because he understands the team situation financially.
Yeah,
he understands the implications of why franchises are doing what they're doing.
I agree. I thought Bobby was good, but the other problem with Bobby is Bobby was in that weird rotation of guys or gals that weren't on the main set, and like he's clearly hopping from the ABC broadcast to the ESPN broadcast. I thought he was in the crowd. Because the ABC one I thought was Dari, that little weird set that was like,
it was three people.
It was Dari, Stephen A., and Bob Meyer. And then the ESPN broadcast was Malika was in the center. Billis, Andrea. Is that where Chimi was?
Yeah.
And I think her. And then Monica. I think Monica McNult was doing interview. I think whenever they did the interview, she was shown on both. But the other thing that I was wondering is, like, is it the fact that, like, no one there is a draft guy? Like, the closest thing to the quote-unquote draft guy is Billis, just because Billis covers college basketball.
Well,
weekend.
They have Gavoni, but they didn't really utilize him all that much. And then it's obvious, too, that Shams is still getting comfortable on the air. For so long, that was
Well, and
Woj.
Then I think Shams also had this thing. And this is another complaint I have. This is not ESPN. This is the league. I don't understand why they want their league to be so difficult to follow. Because you can do this whole thing of, well, it's, you know, it's legally what's best and whatnot. But Shams Charania, whose job is to cover transactions in the NBA, you could tell and you could feel at times he wasn't even able to follow what the deal was. And that's a problem. Like, when everybody's just sitting there going like, wait, what happened? And then they do this move of, well, you can't wear the hat because the league year's not in. But then they started announcing the trades during the actual broadcast.
What was so confusing is when Adam Silver would come out there and announce a trade that had already been reported like an hour ago. And so you're like, oh, man, is this new? Is this happening now? Oh, no, this is the thing that we heard about an hour ago that you're now trying to reveal as though it's news. That was very confusing.
And it's like, The hat thing should be a simple fix. And it's not like this is a new complaint.
Well, it's like, you don't even have to wear a hat at all. Just don't wear the hat of the wrong team, for crying
out
loud.
My whole deal is, the argument against it is stupid. How many examples? Somebody show me this laundry list of examples of these deals that fall through and the draft pick ends up being wrong. And also, I'm willing to sit there and go, put the hat on the guy that was actually drafted by the team. And if we do find out 6 weeks later that something fell through, okay. But he was drafted by that team that night. Like, I use the example. Eli was drafted by the San Diego Chargers. They took him one overall. They then trade him to the New York Giants, and the Giants trade Phillip Rivers to the Chargers. They let Eli wear the Giants jersey. Like, there's no way that deal was finished.
Well, you think about like the marketing of it all. It would be a whole lot better if you could initially kind of make that connection for the fan between that player and the franchise he's going to play for. Instead, in that moment too, think about it for the player, that immortalized moment, the thing that he's been working his whole life for, might be the greatest moment of his life. He's wearing the wrong hat. It's just dumb.
If you're Cedric Coward, would you rather wear the wrong hat or be called Colin Cowherd?
that was fantastic.
Wear the wrong
hat.
Oh,
that was so good.
I mean, listen, I know everybody wants a 3-and-D guy, But what if we like change the whole like outlook? What about a blazing five? Or like think about the pretzel that Cowherd could put players in, just like firing takes as trash talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Durant would be in a pretzel. Like you're not even in my top five.
Oh, that was cringeworthy. I was pretty close to switching over to our CBS Sports HQ coverage with Gary Parrish and Adam Finkelstein and Matt Norlander and those guys. For whatever reason, though, like I typically just stick with the main broadcast on stuff like this. I don't get into the alternative stuff as often.
I had a follower that said gave up on it, kept the broadcast on, muted it, and then listened to the the ESPN was running a YouTube show. I think it was on the app, but it was Windhorse. It's a podcast. It was like numbers. I checked in on that. That was actually good, but like, you know, like when you, it's kind of like a watch along. It's a lot like, you know, a Manning cast or whatnot, where it was casual. They were sitting at a desk. Windhorse is kind of driving the bus from like the transaction perspective, but they were letting the podcast. And so like I came in way too late and I was like, okay, like I actually thought the guys were interesting and insightful, but I was like, I just came in too late. And it's like, I can't follow along.
Well, so obviously the ESPN investment in NBA draft coverage is so far behind what it is in the NFL. There's probably ratings reason for that. And then also from a content perspective, going to game seven didn't help.
I was going to say, I think the other problem is you have, you know, the Super Bowl ends, whatever, the first week in February, or second week in February, whatever it ends up being. And then you have basically 2+ months to really like dive into draft coverage. They clearly also have more draft people on staff, but I think to your point, that's a financing thing. I think the other problem that ESPN is going through, I wonder if this is a little like golf. And hear me out. Remember about 3 or 4 years ago when watching golf on CBS, I know you're a company man, trust me, it's going to turn around. It wasn't great. You know what I mean? Like it was a tough watch. They had to usher out some people that had been doing it for a long time. They had to usher in some new blood. Shout out Seller Shy, Pride of Memphis, Tennessee. And now when you watch golf on CBS, it is like a breath of fresh air. Like it is clearly the superior product, but they had to get the old guard out that Frank Chicanian basically just wanted to be a member at Augusta his whole life. And so he kept doing everything that was wrong. I wonder if ESPN is falling into the trap of this is actually a producer, director, executive problem more than it is the actual talent on the stage. Because to your other point, it felt to me like the other issue was clearly they were just getting fed stats, because it felt like after every draft pick, especially on the ESPN, I can't necessarily speak to the ABC broadcast as much, but on ESPN, it's just like, people are just throwing out stats about the player, and you're like, okay, that's spoon-fed. That like tells me nothing. But I wonder if it's actually the behind the scenes is the issue rather than the people on the stage.
Well, and just a lack of chemistry with the people who are on the stage.
Right, none of them work with each other regularly.
Andrea Carter, Jay Billis, all talented hosts and commentators in their own right, but not people who often work together, especially in that environment. And so, you know, I think it's pretty glaring last night when you miss Woj, because like Woj, when he's on the air, I mean, he's the orbit of everything. It's all revolving around Woj, right? And you can always know that you're coming back to him and he's going to have something for you. And I don't think Shams has that gravitas yet. I mean, he's still early in his career and is in his first year with ESPN. So I think that hurts him a little bit. And then you divide the labor. I mean, why are we putting the draft on ABC and ESPN? Has linear weeknight television gotten so bad that they're like, yeah, Disney's like, yeah, let's put the draft on ESPN and ABC and live on YouTube, because then you're just dividing your talent up to a kind of an unhealthy degree. And instead of having an A team, clear cut, number one must watch broadcast, you're giving the viewers options, but are any of those options really like premier viewing experiences?
So I think it helps being in the summer. I mean, this is the other thing, that if you paid attention to Upfronts, which is the big New York event where the networks invite the advertisers in, everyone was basically plugging sports. How about this? Fox as a network, I believe they have 3 hours of scripted programming during the week this fall. 3 hours of like shows that are actually scripted. So they're running into this thing where they're in a transition from, okay, well, these shows that were super expensive to make that would normally have been our primetime lineup, well, A, you're in the summer, the season's over with, they're not really doing that. So they're looking for something to put on. I think you're just trying to catch as many eyeballs as possible. So they're doing that. But also it feels like with ESPN, it's like ESPN is pretty big on shoving ESPN people down our throats. So it's like it's more people to give a spot to.
Yeah, I just didn't think it was the best night for ESPN. I just thought they leaned too hard into, I will say Danny Wolf's brother breaking down, man, like that was kind of funny. Am I a bad person because I was laughing? Oh, you might have changed the channel by then. I don't know if you saw it.
I was watching it on the side, but I was already watching the Bear at that point. But didn't also like wasn't Danny kind of going through tears? Like
so, they were a little late
as he was sitting down.
Wolf was struggling because it was getting to the
He was falling. Because then I was texting Mark. I'm like, this is why like I would not go to the draft unless I'm like a top five guy. Like I'm not going. I'm not going to be Will Levis. I'm no thank you.
They'd already had like Ben Seraph and I think Yon Barrenjay come down out of the audience. Like they weren't even like in the green room, and they had come down from the audience after they'd been selected. And meanwhile, Wolf and Liam McNeely were the last two down on the floor. And 2 minutes before Wolf gets picked, like the production crew is like, oh, he's having a rough time. Let's zoom in on him. And he's like holding back tears. Like he's really struggling. He hadn't been picked yet. Then he gets picked, but his brother can't stop crying. And they were like tears of joy that Danny had been selected. But
see, honestly, I didn't even think that was the most awkward brother moment.
Oh, right. When they went to Khan's brother,
yeah.
And they tried to get him to.
And they like, they had stage fright of the highest order.
Yeah, right. So ESPN leaned in way too heavily on having the family members carry the show.
This was also another thing. It's like the NFL just does it better. Like, did anybody see a flyover last night? Because I did at the NFL draft. Where were my fighter jets?
I mean,
where were my Black Hawk helicopters? Like, where was my heavy-handed, look how great we are? They did a little bit of that, but not. I don't know. I feel like when it's just like as a production, whenever I watch the NBA draft, it always feels flatter to me. And I don't know if that's a crowd thing. I don't know if that's a.
Yeah, it's also the crowd. The crowd doesn't get super engaged. And also, they don't move the venue at all. Like, it's such a huge deal whenever a new city gets the NFL draft and you get all the local NFL fans. A lot of people travel in for it. You know, it's like landing the Olympics, for crying out loud, if you're the local tourism bureau. And the Barclays Center is now just the eternal host, I guess, for the NBA draft. You can move that thing around, generate a little more buzz, a little more excitement, generate some storylines with that. They don't do that. Though, so it's just there's just less invested in it, and it was kind of a dud last night because I mean they had the whole thing for Cooper Flagg and they had nothing for anyone else.
All right, Hugh Freeze. All right, Cobb. So you said this has been going around in the CBS Slack channel. This from Cody Nagel over at CBS Sports. Auburn football recruiting is trending downward in the early days of the summer dead period, with two blue-chip prospects decommitting this week. That alone has Tiger fans a bit restless, but even more so after seeing how much time Coach Hugh Freeze spent on the golf course. According to AL.com, Freeze's logged 11 rounds since the start of June in the USGA's Gin database.
His handicap is down to 5.9, Jeffrey, daggone.
Not only that, have you ever seen his golf swing?
Oh, it's bad.
It's disgusting, but it is. It's effective. I'll give him that. He exceeded the number of public rounds the system displays, meaning he played more than 20 rounds already this calendar year. That, of course, has had fans in a tizzy. Okay, so a couple things here. Number one, there have also been internet reports on No Laying Up's Trap Draw podcast. Tron Carter mentioned that it's been told to him that Freeze also has a burner gin account, which I will say that's improvement. Like, last time Hugh got in trouble for not having a burner, but apparently he also has a burner because one year he logged triple digit rounds.
Yeah, okay, so why is he so desperate to have a handicap? You could play 150 rounds and never enter one. I've never had a handicap, and I play a fair amount of golf. Like, why does he have to have a USGA number here?
I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say he's one of the most dishonest men that I've ever known, but he kind of is honest on a golf course. And, I mean, when you play what he's playing a lot of money matches. Like, you know what I mean?
So he's, you know, so his buddies want him to have one.
Right.
Because, right.
Well, okay. I mean, honestly, if you're playing with Hugh, like, you got to keep one eye open. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I definitely. I'm surprised to hear you say that you think he might be an honest golfer.
The few times I've been around him at a golf course, he's been pretty by the book, which was shocking, I will admit. But I could also be like, if you know him, you don't trust him. So he's like, you better post those scores. I also think it could be a vanity thing. You know, he's going to be one of the lowest handicap coaches out there. Like, and so like, it's a point of pride.
Yeah. It just blows my mind that here we are going into year three in June for Auburn football. And the discourse has gotten to how many rounds of golf Hugh Freeze is playing. To me, Jeffrey, this is a terrible sign for what's ahead for Auburn football, because we're talking about how many rounds of golf Hugh Freeze is playing right now. And really, he should be garnering sympathy. My man's been going through a cancer battle. And the fact that we're now talking about how many rounds of golf he's playing and use that as a reason for why he's recruiting so poorly, like this is going to get ugly, man. Like, we are headed towards another Brian Harsin level breakup here. Like, how long before people start trying to dig up other stuff? You remember how ugly it got with Harsin and them trying to connect the dots there with the recruiting staff?
I remember how ugly it got with Freeze.
Yeah, I mean, this just to me is not setting up well for Auburn.
Okay, I'll say this. I would imagine if we would have looked at Spurrier's handicap in the months of June, there'd be just as many, if not more, rounds logged. The problem is, nobody would actually have... The thing is, no one actually cares about the rounds of golf. It's more reflective of, hey, man, less time on the golf course, more time on the recruiting trip.
Yeah, they care about your rounds of golf when you're not recruiting at the desired level.
Spurrier,
and you're not producing the desired results.
Spurrier's
was
going
good
up,
enough on the field and in recruiting to where, yeah, man, like, go play you some golf.
Yeah, I will say he's also a pro of, even like in moments where you think he can be sympathetic, he is an all-time pro at figuring out a way to just go ahead and light all that sympathy on fire.
Yeah, it's incredible the fact that, I mean, it's really, I guess, not shocking that at Auburn fans would get to this level. But the fact, like, it's just mind-blowing. When people ask, like, it just means more. What does that mean? This is what we're talking about. Fans on a message board discovering the dude's golf handicap and using that as a weapon against him as he struggles.
I need to look and see. The other reasons why he could have a handicap is so that people could see where he's played. One of my favorite Hugh Freeze. This was Hugh Freeze in a nutshell. Yeah, Augusta's nice, but the lotion's better. All right, Hugh. thank. Good take, man. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at JasonSmith929. Jason, we'll get to your thoughts and feelings on the draft, but I was telling Cobb this. I've not figured out exactly how to articulate it, but I have just, as time has gone on, the longer we get away from what the Pac-12 did with that public pressure and then putting the Tiger fan base in a frenzy and whatnot, it just really doesn't sit well with me. And then you watch today, they're adding Texas State. Like, the fact that I feel like they just played with everyone's emotions when they had no plan, it doesn't sit well with me. I get that this is a bad question because there is no question, but I just wanted you to know that the more I think about it, whenever I see these things, like, it makes my blood pressure raise.
Completely understand, and I'm with you in terms of the frustration. I think I appreciate probably Dr. Ed Scott, the athletic director of Memphis's transparency even more, because like he showed you, he said, this isn't even close right now, sort of to start. And nothing, I know we've got details of the TV deal in terms of CBS, but you know, once we too got the number from, I believe it was Jonah Dillon who had it originally, yep, that Memphis made $11 million in the AAC last year in Pernetti, you know, they expect that number to go up. No, what it showed you was they were never real serious,
yes,
about you as you know, one of the big pieces of this future that, like you said, Jeffrey, seems so unplanned. Seems so, yeah, we're the Pac-12. Of course we're going to get this done. When we had questions the entire, well, show us the bottom line. Oh, you can't? Well, this is weird. And so, and we're supposed to, you know, there are things you leap out on faith on that in life. This was not one of them when you're talking about having to take care of your other Olympic sports. The fact that you would have had the early exit fee, they were only giving you $2.5 million on that $25 million that SMU had to pay to get out. And so it never made much sense, but it always showed us that from the get-go. And so I think, you know, more than anything, it probably, it underlines how good that transparency was for that, because you had people that were emotional here, clearly, and for the right reasons emotional. The AAC, I mean, let's be real, from a competitive standpoint, especially on the basketball side, football's a little better. But it's awful, and so we you've long wanted to get out. That's been Memphis's plight in terms of wanting to get into the power structure for a long time. And so anything, and especially something with the Pac-12 name on it, right, looks better, you know, from where you've been than where you've been at, you know, in terms of Pac-12 and what it could represent. But again, when you bore out the numbers, it didn't make any sense for Memphis, and clearly. It's what you said, Jeffrey. They didn't have much of a plan originally, having to, you know, fall back. And now we're looking at Texas State. And frankly, and we said it today, you look at them from a football standpoint, I'm not sure you're not still better off. Of course, basketball, yes, you'd be better off. It would be a better conference than the AAC. Not from a football standpoint necessarily. I'm with you completely. Seemed like a big waste of time, but we've done a lot of that with conference expansion, you know, Big 12, you know, a lot of waste of time there. And so this one, not a little bit different, but still same thing. And not right now, man. I don't think you have to pay much attention until they get a little bit more serious, and maybe that never happens.
All right, Jason, what'd you think of what the Grizzlies did last night, moving up 5 spots to get Cedric Coward? Seems like they must have known he would be off the board by 16.
Yeah.
Seems to me like they were pretty convinced that's who they wanted. They were willing to part with a future first round pick to climb up 5 spots. What was your review, your take on that move?
I like the aggressiveness. It's not unusual for Zach Kleiman. We know that. It's sort of been his MO. When he likes a guy, he will move up and go get him. Now the history there, and particularly, I think he's been trying to nail down this wing spot for a while, and we felt, oh boy, this is getting ugly. Remember Zaire Williams, obviously at one point got a crack at that. We felt better about it at times, but he has not been able to nail this guy down in the draft. You know, if we're looking right now, if we're looking at this prospect as the 3, and with KCP sort of in the fold, you do that. And that's the way he's been sort of been talked about. And so, you know, you're taking another shot. It's a big swing. This is different than Zaire in this way, though. I mean, Zaire, you hoped would pan out and be your starting 3. You're hoping that in this case for Coward. The difference is there seem to be a lot more people and a lot more teams that were higher on Coward in terms of the upside and what he could be. When you traded up from 17 to 10 and got Zaire, and there was more in that with the Pelicans, you know, I think the switching was Steven Adams and Jonas. But when you made that, you know, there were people when you made that deal that said, wait a minute, Zaire Williams, you're going to go up there and get him? You could have waited. Like there wasn't as much of a buzz in terms of the ceiling. And we've seen it. I mean, Jeffrey's joked about it, but we've seen it out there. There are folks saying because this guy watches The Last Dance every time he's on an airplane or whatever else, or has Kobe.
They've been showing it a lot on ESPN this week. I don't know if you noticed. Yeah.
Kobe tendencies. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've heard that as well. It's like that he should have gone number 2 in the draft behind Cooper Flagg. And so you didn't hear any of that about Zaire. And to go back to your question, David, from that standpoint, it excites me. The idea that maybe this guy could come in and be the next Jalen Williams that takes off relatively immediately. I mean, he certainly got the body. And if you're comparing it to Jalen Williams with that wingspan and sort of his height and athleticism and everything else. But my point, if you've hit on a guy like that, oh my gosh. I mean, wow. And I'm not ruling that out. Jeffrey's right. I wanted Memphis to get more vets. And if that meant using the 16 pick, Cole Anthony, whatever else, to go get a guy like that that hits the needs, that's available, then let's do that. Because here's my issue. You keep going young, and you've done this now both intentionally and unintentionally. I'm using some of Zach Kleiman's phrasing in terms of getting younger the last 2 years. let's just say it doesn't work out, right? Coward's not Jalen Williams. He's not Michael Jordan. He's not Kobe. He's just another one of a long line of wings that doesn't work out. Well, how much at that point has well, you know, your superstar, Ja Morant, you know, how has he looked at this point? We're year seven. You know, if this thing is in year seven, year eight, and you're still just got youth and you're not getting any closer, how's Ja feeling about the organization at that point? If you've constantly put youth around him and never gone all in the way that it feels like Houston has done. Houston finished two seed one time. You did it twice. Houston's going all in. They're going for it, you know, and still relatively young with a lot of those guys. That move has not come. Maybe it never can. But that's my one fear, Cobb, with this, is that here we go again. You're trying to get on a three, and in this case, it's a really unusual story. The guy was at Division III at one point. He only played, what, six games at Washington State, hasn't done it against high-level competition. I mean, there's still a lot to doubt about this prospect. All that said, I'm hopeful he's finally hit on it and that it's not going to be a deal where you've packed another young guy around, you know, maybe that your best chance at having a superstar here in Memphis. I realize Ja's got to do his part, and Lord knows I've spoken on that enough in terms of his durability. He got to stay on. None of this matters if Ja Morant isn't playing more than 50, 60 games a year. So that point B doesn't matter if A in taking care of first. But all that said, Cobb, I'm cautiously optimistic, but also, you know, ready to say if it does all flail out. And I'm all for Zach Kleiman finding different ways to skin this cat in terms of winning, because I think the formula has gotten pretty narrow. But if it doesn't, you failed. You failed to get this thing to the next level with Ja Morant, with Jaren Jackson. And, you know, that will be on your record. You know, your draft record in terms of, you know, moving up in first round, it won't have been good. You will have missed on this three several times. And so at some point, yeah, if it doesn't work out, it can't just keep being kicking the can down the road. Sam Presti got another shot after he made a finals. It feels like Kleiman's getting another shot here with his coach, you know, a second shot. If you consider, okay, the big three didn't work, kind of reached the end of the road, here's a second shot. And he has far less equity built up in terms of what he's actually accomplished as a GM. So I'm still leaving room for, you know, this could absolutely not be the success story that many have convinced themselves today that it's going to be.
The other thing that I was thinking about last night, and it kind of crystallized, one of the big buzzwords, of course, in the NBA is timeline. You know, you got to get everybody on the same timeline. You know, it's this core on their timeline.
Right.
I think that you kind of got to throw that away, because I just don't know the way that you have the salary cap. I literally think it's got to be a lot. Like, I'm looking more to the NFL than I am to past NBA like models, because
sure,
yeah, you got to have some veterans, but like I honestly the more we talk it out, and to your previous point about Ja's got to stay on the floor, Ja's got to be a better leader. Like, that's kind of like what it really boils down to. The frustration that I had watching this team last year, like, so much of it was either Ja not being on the floor, or when Ja was on the floor, like, everybody just kind of riding his emotions. When it was going great, everybody's high-fiving, having a great time. But there wasn't a lot of, like, you know, when things are going tough, let's figure out a way out of this. Like, he is going to be the emotional and the tone setter. It's like the same thing with the Thunder. It's like, yeah, SGA's their best player, but like, Lou Dort kind of set the tone. Like, Ja isn't really afforded that. It's like the team goes as he goes. He's got to be the emotional and the physical guy. But like, I think you're going to have to start seeing it with this mix of guys that are at, you know, largely different ages, because I think that's how you have to make it work.
Well, I think you just hit on something that's key. You're right. He is your emotional leader. He's your spirit animal. And when he's riding high, you're riding high. What he hasn't been, at least from, you know, on the outside looking in, and maybe others that follow closer would say it's a little bit different, but that accountability guy, that leadership guy, maybe you say Dort, I still say SGA, just in terms of the way he can hold other guys accountable, Jeffrey, because he's there all the time.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
And it feels like Desmond Bane, in a way, was sort of that. You know, the checking of Santi Aldama earlier this year about defense. I know there's a you know, how that started, who wasn't playing, who wasn't getting effort. But Bane seemed to be a guy that was that guy in the locker room. Hey, guys, we got to pick this up. Ja's never seemed to be that guy, right? Ja does it more with his play. Jaren's never been that guy. And so to your point, I mean, what kind of where you're going here is if you've got all this youth, okay, it has to be on Ja, or you would like it certainly to be, since he is the face of your franchise, more vocal in terms of holding guys accountable. Who's that going to be? Are you going to hope that KCP can be it? Because, you seemed like you were looking for it when you went out and got Marcus Smart. You know, because that's not Ja. I'm with you. That has to go up. But it can't go up unless he's out there. That's what SGA has got. That's why he's the culture setter there, is because he is there every single damn night putting up 30. Then he's back in practice early the next day getting ready. Okay, what's next, guys? I mean, that's where we've got to get to with Ja. So young, old, you know, it probably doesn't matter. At this point, I think it is why I've leaned a little bit more towards vets. That's part of it because – you know, Ja hasn't been that guy, right, in terms of culture setter that you could depend on. That's mature enough to lead it. You don't have to worry about dang thing. In fact, it doesn't matter, you know, who your coach, who your baby, doesn't matter who your coach is. The culture is so good. But we're not there yet with Ja. You're putting more young talent around him. We'll see if he can, you know, sort of take that next step as a leader. Listen, it took Kyrie a long time. It took Kyrie a long time to learn how to stop talking about leading and how you should do it and how to actually turn into just a leader. You do it by action. And Kyrie's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, maybe this is a deal where Ja can still sort of level up to that in terms of better leadership. And I'm talking, he can lead, like you said, Jeffrey, emotion with the highlights, with the way he lifts the team. I'm talking about from an accountability standpoint where everybody's falling in line behind him and, you know, ready to run through a brick wall for the guy. I know it sounds cliche, but with his importance to this franchise, you really need him to step up in that way. He can't do it. Guys are going to roll their eyes at you if you're trying to be Mr. Accountability and you're only playing 50 games. So it all starts back to that. Yes, Jeffrey, him being there and then using that to be able to be the leader in the true way I feel like this franchise needs him to be.
All right, Cobb, I don't know if you knew this. So congratulations, Jason, on the Cubs taking the last
did
two.
We get it?
Okay. Well, I may be reverse jinxing it. The Cardinals still technically get the bat. Cobb, did you know this? Did you know PCA's mom in real life is the mom from Little Big League?
What?
Holy God, I didn't know that.
Pete Crow Armstrong.
Correct. His mom is Ashley Crow, who was the mom in Little Big League. Why does that not get talked about? How am I just discovering this today?
I don't know. I've been to Chicago and learned that it was bobblehead day for PCA, and I didn't know that about his mom. I still I'm starting to consider myself a PCA expert as good a season as he's had. So you've that is a stat nugget. That is a stat gem right there. I had no idea.
Yeah. I used to think when Little Big League came out, I guess obviously if she were the mom in Rookie of the Year, it'd be better. But there's also one of those things where when I was a kid, I liked Little Big League better because it had like the real pros in it, and I kind of liked the fact that even as like a second grader, the fact that they didn't win, like I was like, that was a more interesting movie to me.
Yeah.
But man,
Ashley Crow,
That on MLB Network every now and then. That movie does not hold up. Rookie of the Year holds up way better.
What I'm going to need you to do, Jeffrey, is just stand down. Just send the message up to St. Louis so we can push y'all 4.5 back and everything can calm down. For a while, we 7-plus runs in 6 straight games.
Well, a Monday and Tuesday, I said on Twitter, like, Monday was kind of one of those, like, when the finals is over and you're like, oh my God, what am I going to watch?
And you're hitting 4 home runs all of a sudden.
Right. All of a sudden, I was like, all right, I'm back. And then they get the big win on Tuesday, and I'm like, let's go. Like, let's roll. And then yesterday just took the wind out of my sails, and now I'm like, okay, I'm right back to where I was.
I heard you tell Cobb this isn't real.
Yeah. This is not real. No. Jason, we appreciate it, buddy.
Take care, man. Have a great week.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We got to go to the commission, the NFL. This from Adam Schefter about an hour 15 ago. The NFL is suspending former Ravens kicker Justin Tucker for the first 10 weeks of the upcoming season for violating the league's personal conduct policy. Anyone out there, what have we learned since beginning of last year versus now?
Why was my man not suspended for the first 10 games of last season?
Well, because he was still technically on a roster then.
Wow.
That is the ultimate, the commish, doing what the commish does. Hey, Cobb, it's not about making the easy choice. It's about doing the right thing.
Wow, what strong principles in the NFL here.
Yes.
So impressive.
I mean, he fixed concussions. He ended racism. We stopped hate. And now, standing up for what's right.
But what's his handicap?
He's also an Augusta National member.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Turns out life works out for you if you're the NFL commish. All right, my man, we appreciate you being back.
Yeah, man, thank you.
That is, of course, David Cobb. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.